Well, thank you very much. And I'll just start by saying the Climate Change Committee produced a report, my last report, which in many ways was the sharpest one that we had put forward, because we felt it necessary to say that the current government is not on course for reaching net zero by 2050, nor is it on course to meet the internationally acclaimed targets which it fixed for 2030 and 2035. Of course, you don't say it in quite those terms. You say we are less certain than they are on course. But the truth of the matter is, any mathematician can see that they're not. And we know that because the courts, under the Climate Change Act, had required the government to explain how it was going to reach what are statutory demands. And the government produced a very large number of pages of explanation, which we didn't get in advance, as we always did on any other circumstance. We got it the day in which it was announced. Take some time to read these documents, and by the time we got to the end of it, we were less satisfied than we had been when we started, because a number of things which we had given people the benefit of the doubt became very clearly there was no doubt. And the fact of the matter is, we're not on course. And that was before the Prime Minister's statement. Now, I've been in politics a long time, and I think I'm recognised as being fairly independent. And if I may say so, I know precisely where we are here. We are within a year, really, of a general election. And people do, I think, rather silly things then. And one of the things they do is to try to make a division when there isn't a division between themselves and their opposition. And in order to do that, it's not always very easy. I remember an election when Mr. Blair was signified by eyes that made him look like the devil. He manifestly was not an extremist, and that wasn't a terribly successful campaign. But we're now faced with a Prime Minister who says that he's not going to do a number of things. He's not going to have seven bins in every home. I know of nobody who's ever suggested that. He's not going to have a tax on meat. Nobody's ever suggested that. He's not going to insist upon you carrying more people in your cars than you want to. Nobody has ever suggested that. So those things should not worry us. What should worry us is the belief that somehow or other we can reach net zero without anybody being upset in any circumstances. And there are a series of groups of people who are invented for this purpose. One of them is a favourite of the newspapers. He's called the motorist. Now, I know of nobody who defines themselves as a motorist, and I know that if I did know somebody who would define themselves as a motorist, he would be unlikely to be a bosom pal. The truth is that it is an invented concept, which is that we have to create circumstances in which people do not feel themselves imposed upon. And therefore we say, if we put the date back to 2035 for EVs, then nobody need worry, because they can still buy second-hand cars which are not EVs. They can still sell their cars that are not EVs. The thing you didn't mention was that was exactly the same if you had the date at 2030. There was no change whatsoever. And indeed, the demands on the industry remain the same. I go through that in some detail because I am very interested in the result and reaction of the industry. The companies that had done what they needed to do to meet what the government had insisted upon were furious. I think that the chairman of Ford put it exactly right. He said, we want governments which have ambition, commitment, and are always sticking to the things that they believe and have said they're going to stick to. They need to have consistency. Commitment, ambition, consistency. I'm afraid we don't have a government which has any of those three things in enough strength. But don't let's think that it is necessarily true that a change of government will be different. When the Labour Party very rightly said that it would not have long-term further expansion of exploitation and exploration in the North Sea, the first two organisations to attack it were their two biggest donors, the GMB and Unite. So don't let's kid ourselves. It's a tough world there, politically, to deliver net zero. And it's a tough world too, because all politicians are better at policy than delivery. We're not good at delivering, and it is delivery that the Climate Change Committee has been pressing about. And it's delivery that the courts are now considering, because, of course, under the Climate Change Act, this is a statutory requirement, and the government has to show to the courts that it has a policy and a program. And it is no good the Prime Minister saying, we are going to meet net zero, when it's merely wishful thinking. Because if it were not true before he made his statements, it can hardly be likely to be true afterwards, although in the spirit of the Climate Change Committee, basing its statements only on the facts, on science, they are going to have another look at it to see what the effects of the Prime Minister's statements are. Now, I think all this is important because this is about UK and global progress. And I think we ought to recognise just what a contribution the United Kingdom has made towards global progress up to now, and why it was so important for the Climate Change Committee to say that it felt that Britain has now ceased to be the leader. Because what we have done is to set the targets which the world has begun to accept. It was we who first committed ourselves to net zero in 2050. It was we who set the best targets you could have set in the COP26 meeting in Glasgow. It is we who have said to the rest of the world, we've got to raise the money to help the developing countries to move from where they are to where they ought to be without the intervening and damaging dirty stage. British have got every reason to be proud of our history, not least the all-party agreement on climate change, invented by the Conservatives in opposition, won over with every other party, including the Protestant Unionists from the north of Ireland, a miracle working its way through, and then the government accepting that it would have to take it on board because the Labour Party was determined to be part of this. So all party commitment to the process which we have. And we've got now 15 or 16 nations that are following us because they see this structure as the best that we can have. So my message to you is, first, that we have done more than anyone else. And secondly, we are resiling, and that is unconscionable and unacceptable. And the third thing is to say that we have got to win back the battle. And that means winning the hearts and minds of people in Britain. It means making sure that we don't accept the Daily Mail's motorist as the person who is going to decide how we proceed. We have to bring back climate change into the democratic debate. And all of us here have got to help. Many of us here are not good at it, particularly the scientists. You will talk in a language which people don't understand. You don't get it to the places that people need to hear it. You still talk about kilowatt hours and don't talk about bills. We have to move the whole of the nation into an understanding that this has to be fought now, immediately, with urgency, and that it has to be fought in a way which leads the world instead of becoming tag end Charlie. Just remember, the Americans have moved into a new place. The European Union, the rest of Europe, the place where we ought to be and foolishly left, they have moved into a new place. And China has announced the biggest move towards offshore wind, onshore wind, and photovoltaics of any time in history. It will meet its targets. And it has turned that into a business. That's why they're frightened about their cars. That's why we're frightened about their photovoltaics. They know where the future is. It's to fight the battle of climate change and to win the economic argument at the same time.